Conclusions. This, then, is the promise for tidal power. By its very nature, it cannot be isolated from the community. Although shown to be marginally unable to stand on its own economic feet, a tidal power project offers for the Severn Estuary, and hence for the country, major industrial and social advantages that threaten to relegate it, its importance in a scheme designed to exploit it. Can there be any doubt, therefore, of the future of tidal power if an overall picture is taken of the significance of such a project? And then there's a couple of references here, one of which is to a paper by the same author and R.G. Morgan entitled The Severn Estuary, Key to the Future of a Region, 1967, but it doesn't say where it was published. Well, it's only half past the hour, so I'll read another of these articles, title of which is Doing the Easy Bit. From the wastelands of Hemel Hempstead, where the town planners should have allowed the river to run through the main street, we print with a great deal of pleasure a plaintive story of the trials and tribulations of the nuclear architects. And it's accompanied by a series of cartoons, and there's a small note at the bottom. All headings have been inserted by the editor. It does lose some of its force without the cartoons, but they... What easy bit? Why, the architecture, of course. The architecture of nuclear power. The sort of stuff one sketches on the back of an old envelope while waiting for the bus, or dreams up in the bath. Or does one? Togetherness. Share our little day with us for a moment as we begin by unfolding the preliminary civil and plant drawings from Knutsford and endeavor to reconcile one with the other. At least we have to concede that both departments are working on the same station. Having first deciphered the approximate shape of the thing, with a few intelligent guesses on heights and widths, we produce, at an early stage, a quick mini-model in card of the general massing, which can be stuffed into a briefcase to emerge triumphant at meetings like the proverbial rabbit. It gives our colleagues at Radbroke Hall some idea how their new young hopeful is likely to shape up, as well as helping us to start thinking in terms of function, proportion, punctuation, shade and shadow, and the rest of the architectural mystique. Low cunning. And then to more mundane matters, like keeping the weather out. It would be so much easier if all we had to do was cover the entire complex in towering cliffs and plateaus of concrete several feet thick, relieved perhaps by some of Mr. William Mitchell's sculptural effects, all at monumental cost. At least this would ensure that the floods, hurricanes, and dust storms kept in special reserve for attacking nuclear stations would be defeated from the outset. As it is, we endeavor to achieve immunity from the British climate by far more prosaic and less costly means, involving a combination of low cunning and pure genius. We have, too, the little matter of the schedule of finishes. To toss off one of these for a typical A station scheme involves some 280-plus separate compartments and areas, each with its walls, floors, and ceilings. Any computer will tell you this makes a grand total of well over 800 items. And when we are expected to specify a floor finish which is hard-wearing, non-slip, decontaminable, mechanical scrubbable, oil, grease, and stiletto heel-proof, pleasing to the eye and a delight to walk on, you have a measure of what we are up against. Le bon mot. We must endeavor also to overcome the skepticism of the Royal Fine Arts Commission, and convince its distinguished committee of our masterly approach to the problem by means of colored presentation drawings, perspective impressions, a detailed scale model, and an architectural write-up. After the fourth or fifth station, the write-up tends to get a little bogged down with stock phrases such as softening the impact of this dominant mass, or unifying the complex. If we are dealing with a B station, good neighborliness to Brother A is a must. In sympathy with the character of the surrounding landscape is another well-used favorite, not to be lightly discarded. to which the usual follow-up is thrown with great force, it is relatively easy to get sympathetic toward rolling, heather-clad, sheep-dotted hills, but entirely another matter when confronted with a waste of scrub-strewn shingle, perhaps enlivened here and there with dumps of old bedsteads and abandoned bangers. Supporting role. If a consultant architect has been appointed, then it behooves us to consult, and that right early. Quite often these gentlemen are stars in the architectural firmament, and besides wishing to express their own ad hominem, do not want to risk having their luster dimmed by any possible gaucheries on our part. Consult also we must with our good friends in engineering services, who heat, light, ventilate, and drain. But for our civilizing and restraining influence, without doubt they would fill up the whole plant. Without doubt they would fill up the whole place with ventilation plants, switch gear, ducts, and what have you, and clad it from top to bottom in one vast facade of intake and extract louvers. Rules and regs. After the tender has gone in, we may be asked to join in a little game called Questionnaire. Any number of players can take part, but there is a proper book of rules called the Amplified Specification. What you must not do is beg the question or give ill-considered answers. For example, if you are asked why it appears from your drawings that visitors are in grave danger of falling out of the viewing gallery straight down onto the pile cap, you must give a reasoned reply and not state wildly that the cost of parachutes has been included in the tender. Map makers. One major task is putting the jigsaw together in the form of a comprehensive drawings embracing the whole project, a sort of nuclear atlas. These are eagerly awaited, for without them no one would know how to get from, say, the active effluent treatment to the BCD room by the shortest legitimate route. A BCD burst charge detector. Since the turbine house now has a tendency to nestle coyly against the reactor building, swallowing up the control block in its amorous advance, our task is rather less spread than when it stood aloof at the end of a connecting bridge. If it eventually ends up underneath the reactors, in the ultimate embrace, we shall have to think seriously of inverted drawing boards and longer architects. Left with the baby. And so onward to the end. But our problems stay with us long after operations have settled down in the administration block, the fuel loading is underway, and our Radbroke Hall brothers have moved to pastures new. Of such are the icy blast which blows through the steam pipe bay, the draft under the station super's door, the little pool of water that always collects on the fuel store floor with the wind in the west, and the inevitable smell on the landing. These it is our special pleasure and privilege to eliminate. And so we hope to the next inquiry, and the one after that. As the bard has said, to do the act that might the addition earn. E.J.B. Let's see. I could certainly read the article on metrication. I know of at least one person who would be gratified by that. Introducing croquet, a skillful and absorbing tactical game played in all kinds of weather. There's a column of extracts from paper, from newspapers and so on, starting with weird misprints. Electrical Review. In its offer to Nuclenor Spain and to Sinatom Belgium in 1066, TNPG, working closely with a production group of the Atomic Energy Authority, and William the Conqueror, should have been 1966, obviously, but yes, they've printed a little, in boldface italics beneath each extract, they print a little editorial response. The Times. Fishermen at Poole were concerned today about a proposal to discharge radioactive waste into the harbor. The Southern Gas Board has asked the Ministry of Agriculture for permission to pipe 12 kilograms of uranium and depleted uranium into the harbor from a new gasworks being built in the town. Well, if we can have gas-cooled uranium nuclear power stations, there's no reason why they can't have uranium-cooled gasworks. No, I have no idea what's actually being talked about there. Thompson News. The CEGB have placed a contract with the Nuclear Power Group Limited, of which John Thompson is a founder member, for the design, construction, and commissioning of the 130-megawatt electrical twin reactor Hinkley Point B AGR nuclear power station. If the boiler performance at our 1,300-megawatt Hinkley Point B AGR station doesn't come up to standard, we'll know who to blame. Applied Atomics. There was no longer any question of a fight between fossil and nuclear power stations. The decision had gone in favor of nuclear power. The fight was now on between different types of nuclear power stations. Quoted from IAEA Scientific Secretary R. Krim at the Conference on Nuclear Power Costs in London. And with no editorial comment. Daily Telegraph. Chemical giants atom desperation threat. Desperation suggestions to cut power costs being suggested by big chemical producers. Dreams of do-it-yourself nuclear power have been jolted into life by Rio Tinto Zinc's grand design for Anglesey. RTZ has proposed to the government that it build jointly with the Atomic Energy Authority a 200 million pound, 100 kilowatt nuclear power station. We are all in favor of cutting the cost of power. Canute has no hesitation in offering a do-it-yourself mini-nuclear kit to any chemical giant for a 200-kilowatt station for only 100 million pounds. Wound up being a thousand... That would refer to the 1,000-megawatt Vilfa station on the island of Anglesey. Nucleonics Week. Yankee passed the 7 million megawatt-hour cumulative generation mark on June 25th, the first commercial nuclear power plant in the world to do so. In the same issue of Nucleonics Week, a nuclear electricity generating chart was published and showed quite clearly that Barclay Bradwell, Hunterston A, and Hinkley Point A had all passed the 7 million mark before Yankee. I think there's a terminology confusion there, because of course all of those British stations are two-unit stations. There's reactor, not every plant has only one reactor. Broadcast, the Bradwell news sheet. First in the world, at 1648 hours on Wednesday, July 26th, Bradwell became the first civil nuclear power station in the world to achieve 10,000 million units sent out to the consumers. And a table says Top 10. Using Nucleonics Week as the source of reference, we list below the 10 most productive nuclear power stations in the world. The figures given are valid up to September 1967 and exclude the Calder Hall and Chapel Cross reactors. And then there's an asterisk for TNPG design and construction. So, number one, Bradwell, cumulative total megawatt-hours gross, 11,886,333. Number two, Hinkley Point, so Bradwell is one of the starred ones. Number two, Hinkley Point A, 9,906,662. Number three, Barclay, star, 9,808,289. Number four, Hunterston A, 8,159,882. Pardon me. Number 5, Yankee, in USA, 7,331,354. Number 6, Dresden, in Illinois, 7,151,579. Number 7, Dungeness A, star, 6,753,985. Number 8, Latina in Italy, star, 6,001,198. Number 9, Indian Point, near New York City, 5,705,195. Number 10, Trosfynydd in Wales, 5,579,548. Let's see, there's a geographical article about Ayrshire in Scotland, where the Hunterston plant was located. On the Firth of Clyde, not far, as these things go, from Glasgow. CPRIS. Royaume-Uni. Hunter Stun B. Hunter Stun B, alas, has been shut down. Actually, at the beginning of this year, owing to engineering difficulties. And so, if I want to visit a nuclear power station during the, in the course of going to the World Science Fiction Convention in Glasgow, I shall have to pick another one. Because it was quite close. A pity, that. But there's a description here. I'll read you. There's a couple of pages occupied with the description of the Hunter Stun B AGR station, which the construction of which was expected to take 4 years and actually took much longer. On October 13th, the South of Scotland Electricity Board placed a contract with TNPG for the design, construction, and commissioning of Scotland's first AGR nuclear power station. Part of the delay may have been deliberate slowdown, as in the case of Vilfa, but also, it must be said, that the industry suffered a great deal from the gap between the last of the Magnox plants being ordered and the first of the AGRs, and also from excessive confidence in the AGR design, which, as it turned out, wasn't nearly as good as had been hoped. For some people, Friday the 13th may be viewed as a day of ill omen. For TNPG, it was a red-letter day. The contract for the 1,250-megawatt electric Hunter Stun B AGR station was placed with us, and the site work started immediately. An impression of the completed station is printed on the front cover. AGR being Advanced Gas-Cooled Reactor. I may not have specified that. One in competition. Hunter Stun B is the third large commercial AGR nuclear power station under construction in Britain. Dungeness B and Hinkley Point B are the other two. The contract was won in the face of determined opposition from the other two British consortia, and is the seventh nuclear station, 13 reactors, to emerge from TNPG drawing boards. Previous TNPG nuclear stations have been located in the southeast and southwest of England. The opportunity to build north of the border, and to work with colleagues from the South of Scotland Electricity Board, is immensely satisfying. The British stations were all two-reactor stations, but Latina in Italy had a single reactor. Where is it? A map on page 6 depicts the county of Ayrshire of Burns fame and locates the Hunter Stun site. It is, without doubt, the most magnificent one we have occupied, sheltered on the landward side by Goldenberry Hill and facing out across the Firth of Clyde to the island of Great Cumbrae and the peaks of Arran. Weather-wise, the year-round climate is more equable than any other part of Scotland. The mean summer and winter temperatures of the district are 14.3 degrees centigrade, 57.9 Fahrenheit, and 4.4 centigrade, 40 Fahrenheit, respectively. Average annual rainfall is 35 inches, and the average annual sunshine, 1,500 hours. That's out of 8,760, by the way, so don't count on solar power in Scotland, is what I'm saying. Existing on the site is a Magnox Type A station, see photograph, which has been in successful operation since early 1964, a White Fish Authority experimental fish-rearing station using warm water from the A station outflow is located on the site. Replication of design. For the first time in Britain, one organization, TNPG, obtained two large nuclear contracts within the space of a calendar year. This proximity in time allowed TNPG to submit a reactor design for Hunter Stun B, which virtually replicates the Hinkley Point B project. The twin reactors, turbine house, and control room form a single building complex. Each reactor is enclosed in a pre-stressed concrete pressure vessel with integral boilers and gas circulators, a design pioneered by the group at Oldbury. Each reactor supplies steam at conventional pressure and temperature to a 665-megawatt turbo alternator. The fuel used is enriched uranium, as UO2 ceramic, and the reactors are refueled on power by a single charge machine. Cooling water is drawn from and returned to the Firth of Clyde. Some differences do occur between the two stations. At Hinkley, the station is founded on thin broken limestone bands interspersed with mudstone rock. Tougher red sandstone in the reactor area makes excavation more difficult at Hunterston. In the turbine house, the layout changes as the two 665-megawatt machines are of C.A. Parsons' design. At Hinkley, they are AEI machines. A change has also been made to the standard A change has also been made in the standby generating equipment. Hunterston B uses diesel sets as opposed to the peak-lopping gas turbine machines at Hinkley. The Hinkley concept was actually rather clever, in my opinion. They had peaking turbines, which were also specified for use as the backup generators. Design features. Hunterston B Power Station is essentially a replica of the Hinkley Point B Power Station being built by TNPG for the Central Electricity Generating Board. During 1967, certain improvements were made on the reactor design to accommodate changes in the fuel performance data and also to bring about a reduction in fuel cycle costs. Since details of Hinkley Point B were published, the core design has been modified so that control rod channels may be placed in off-lattice positions. The direct result is an increase in mean fuel rating and a reduction in cost of the initial fuel charge. The gas pressure is now 43 kilograms per square centimeter at the circulator outlet, which is about 1 kilogram per centimeter squared higher than the original Hinkley pressure. This is to enable certain increases in coolant mass flow and pressure rise without a change in frame size of the circulator motor. It is worth noting that the 7.5-inch or 190-millimeter fuel channel diameter originally chosen for Hinkley Point B has helped materially in minimizing the extra blowing power. The following description of Hunterston B applies with few exceptions to Hinkley Point B. Fuel cycle. The fuel cycle is based on whole channel discharge, that is, there is no axial shuffling. The whole channel discharge cycle permits higher mean fuel ratings than an axially shuffled cycle, but partially offsetting this is a requirement for higher enrichment. The off-lattice control rod core also permits radial shuffling or repositioning to be eliminated. The refueling operations are therefore the simplest possible, consisting solely of one charge and one discharge operation for each fuel stringer. Though it has to be said that comes at the cost of lower overall burn-up. Gas circulators. The inherent safety of the reactors is enhanced by the use of encapsulated gas circulators, which include a double containment feature. Each circulator, complete with single-stage centrifugal impeller, constant-speed electric motor, and control mechanisms for the variable-pitch inlet guide vanes, is a totally enclosed unit, located in a horizontal penetration at the bottom of the pressure vessel wall. The motor is run in full coolant gas pressure. There are 8 circulators for each reactor, and their small physical size and hence relatively low unit cost makes it economically sound to carry at least one complete spare capsule for the station. The inner end of the vessel penetration may be sealed by a closure dome operated from outside the vessel, and the entire capsule, motor, impeller, and guide vane assembly may be withdrawn from the circuit while the reactor remains at pressure. Operation of the motor and the reactor coolant at full reactor pressure dispenses with the need for a high-pressure rotating oil-fed gas seal. The impeller motor rotor assembly is carried on 2 force-lubricated journal bearings developed to ensure minimum leakage of oil into the reactor coolant gas stream. The circulators do not have pony motors, and in the event of loss of normal supplies, the main motors are fed at reduced voltage and frequency from diesel generator sets. This system is different from that for Hinkley Point B, where 4 gas turbine generators, each rated at 17.5 megawatts, are used for emergency supplies, and because of their size, are capable of supplying the main motors at full speed and rating. Boilers. There are 12 once-through boiler units to each reactor, arranged 3 to a quadrant round the core. Each quadrant is served by 2 gas circulators. The boiler units are arranged to be approximately the maximum size for transport from the works to site. Due to the addition of methane to the reactor coolant to inhibit graphite corrosion, water is produced in the core, and the moisture level is maintained by dryers at about 250 parts per million. As a result of this, careful attention is required in the choice of boiler materials. Mild steel is used where metal temperatures below 350 degrees centigrade exist, and in the range 350 to 520 degrees centigrade, a 9% chromium ferritic steel is used because of its higher corrosion resistance. Above 520 degrees C, an austenitic steel is used. At a reactor shutdown, when the pressure vessel has been purged of carbon dioxide and air-filled, access to the interior of the pressure vessel is possible for inspection and maintenance of the boilers. Radiation from the core is limited by a shield wall built up of steel plates and calcium hydroxide blocks in thick-walled steel tubes. A shield wall of this type was first developed for Hinkley Point B because, for a given attenuation factor, it is much thinner than the baked carbon and steel shield walls of the type hitherto used. Reactor vessel. The pressure vessel is a vertical cylinder with helical multi-layer pre-stressing cables so arranged that no cables are required across the top and bottom slabs. The pre-stressing system of tendons, ducts, and anchorages, together with the threading and stressing operations, accounts for about two-thirds the cost of a typical vessel. It has been found that the helical arrangement, while using more concrete than some alternative systems, gives a smaller number of anchorages for a given total tonnage of tendons, and a lower overall cost. It also has the advantage that the anchorages are concentrated in zones at the end of the vessel, thus reducing the overall envelope of the vessel. During construction, a gantry crane spanning both reactors and the central fuel handling area will be used to lift large, heavy sections of plant into the pressure vessels. The gantry will later be used to carry the single charge machine which serves the two reactors. Reactor core. The core contains 308 fuel channels arranged on a 460mm square lattice. Between these, that is, in interstitial positions, there are 94 channels for control rods and monitoring purposes. There are therefore no vacancies in the fuel lattice as on earlier AGR cores, and the effects that these have on neutron flux levels are eliminated. The graphite is very nearly isotropic and is much more stable dimensionally under irradiation than the material used for earlier gas-cooled reactors. It is therefore well suited for use in large bricks with thick wall sections. The fuel channel bricks are 810 millimeters long and are 16-sided with keyways on 8 sides. The interstitial bricks are square in cross-section. The operating temperature of the core graphite is kept below about 450 degrees C to avoid excessive thermal oxidation and to limit temperature differentials within any brick to less than 50 degrees C. This is achieved by passing about half of the reactor coolant flow downwards through gaps and passages in the core before it joins the remainder at the bottom and then flows upwards through the fuel channels. Turbogenerators. Two 665-megawatt turbogenerators are arranged on parallel axes with their steam ends toward the reactors in order to shorten the main steam pipe runs. They are horizontal, single-shaft, close-coupled, single-reheat machines with one single-flow HP cylinder, one double-flow IP cylinder, and three double-flow LP cylinders. That's high, intermediate, and low pressure. There are two pannier-type condensers, one on each side of the low-pressure cylinder casings. The steam conditions of the turbine stop valve are 2315 psi absolute and 538 degrees centigrade, and after reheat, 569 psi A and 538 degrees C, with a final feedwater temperature of 156 degrees C. Control and instrumentation. Overall control of each reactor is provided by three main control loops. 1. The boiler feed flow is regulated to maintain a constant pressure at the TSV by one loop acting on the four boiler feed regulating valves. 2. The coolant gas flow is regulated by the circulating guide vane control loops to maintain a constant reactor inlet gas temperature. That's a very important distinction. 3. The automatic regulating rods maintain a set level of reactor outlet gas temperature. The core is divided into zones or sectors, and since each sector is controlled by its own regulating rods, this system also maintains spatial stability in the core. These control loops cause the reactor to follow the turbine load demand automatically. Control of running plant is highly centralized, and the instrumentation is conventional, but with a comprehensive data scanning and logging system. There are no online computers, such as will be provided at Hinkley B. The main control room is therefore somewhat larger at Hunterston, but the corresponding reduction in size of the adjoining ancillary rooms means that the control room complex for the two stations is virtually identical in extent. Well, that is actually all the text of that article. There's also a table of main parameters, which in this case gives the steam pressures in kilograms per square centimeter, which is not actually all that much better than pounds per square inch, only slightly. But that should give you a feel for some of the material in this magazine, Canute. Like I say, I didn't read the Christmas recipes column, or the column on fashion for teenagers, or the Christmas stories submitted...